Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio. Hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month, we have a fabulous interview with UK author Emma Nichols, and you'll hear that in a few moments' time. But before we get to that, as usual, we're going to take a look at what's flying high in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what I've been up to over the past month or so. And over the past week or so, I've just been coughing and spluttering quite a lot. So if I've still got a little bit of a remnant of that, I apologise, but I'm hoping it makes me sound all deep and husky and mysterious. That's the plan anyway. So first up, the Amazon charts. And top of the pops, as I record this, in the US is a new author to me, Diana Kane, with her book called Providence. Now, from the cover of this book, looks like a bit of a murder mystery type thing. It's all sort of dark blue and mysterious and but what caught my eye more than the cover was the blurb. Now the blurb starts off quite normally and it tells the story of Dr. Sarah Hudson, who's a doctor on the path to burnout until one night that changes everything. So far so lesfic, but then the blurb stops and the book gives three warnings, like a spoiler alert. Now the first one says you have to have read her previous book before you read this one. The second one says there's going to be sex between women, a lot of it. And the third one says this one's got swearing in it, a lot of it. Now, I'm not sure when it became, I know lesfic has a lot of rules. That's been being discussed on quite a lot of Facebook groups lately. And I know a lot of people don't like swearing. I don't know. My books have always had swearing in. Maybe this one's got crazy amounts of swearing in. But to have a spoiler alert that says it's got a lot of sex in it, I don't know if that's there to make people buy it. If it is, she succeeded because it's number one in the US chart. So well done her. I guess it depends on if you like your protagonists a bit potty mouthed and sexually driven. And who doesn't, frankly? Yay for potty mouthed, sexually driven protagonists, I say. Also, up there in the top of the US and UK charts are new books from Harper Bliss and Jay, who are both regular authors in both charts on either side of the Atlantic. I was going to say the Pacific then, but no, it's definitely the Atlantic. Jay's new one is called Perfect Rhythm, and it tells the story of a burnt-out pop star, Leontine, and small-town nurse Holly, who's unimpressed with Leontine's fame and is also asexual. Now, before we get to the whole asexual bit, let's deal with Leontine. Is that a made-up name? I've never heard the name Leontine. I mean, there are lots of names used in book sets stateside that would never really work or I've never seen used in UK books because they're just not really very common names over here. But Leontine is a new one on me, so let me know, is that an actual name or has Jay just made it up? Anyway, she shortens it to Leo, much easier to get your tongue around. But I'm not sure if Holly does get her tongue around Leo. Hey, see what I did there? Because Holly, as well as being the town nurse, is asexual. So that's quite a novel diversion for this book. So well done, Jay, for dealing with a topic that not many books dare to tread. I've no idea. I haven't read the book, so I've no idea how she does it. But the reviews are really good for this one. So if you fancy reading a bit of a different lesbian romance, get on down to Jay's Perfect Rhythm. Harper Bliss's new one, No Other Love, is book six in her Pink Bean series. And it features couple Annie and Jane as they struggle to keep the romance in their long-term relationship alive. Now, Jane, one of the couple in this romance, is a lesbian romance writer, which is a brave move, I think, by Harper, because I always think that's opening yourself up for a lot of finger pointing from readers saying, is this all about you? But But it's going down a storm, whatever, and the Pink Bean series is a strong force to be reckoned with. I've read a couple of them and they're very good, so if you haven't, there's 6 books to catch up on, so what are you waiting for? And finally in the US, Sarah Waters' Tipping the Velvet is in the top 5, which is great to see. Classic book, and if you haven't read that, I'd recommend it. Also there is Emma Collins' book One Way Ticket, which is the story of Abby, who decides to take a year off and spend it on the beach. And there she meets someone called Peyton, who might be a game changer. They're always called Peyton, aren't they? But Abby and Peyton, it sounds like there's a lot of Y's in that name, a lot of Y's and A's. So will they get together? Read the book and find out. In the UK, Val McDermid's Report for Murder is top of the lesbian fiction chart, so not just the US seeing a return of classic books. And Report for Murder is book 1 in her Lindsay Gordon crime series. Val's just brought out a new book, Insidious Intent, I think it's called. And obviously this Lindsay Gordon book has been put down to 99p to drive sales of that one, but it's selling like hotcakes. And even though it came out 8 years ago, so it just goes to show books are evergreen. They're new to when someone picks it up. So that's really good to hear. And finally, Emma Nichols, today's guest, is in the top 10 still in the UK with both her debut books, Finding You and Remember Me. And we'll be talking about both of those in the interview in a moment. So that's the chart roundup, and welcome to October, as is now traditional. The countdown to Christmas is now on. There are only 80-odd shopping days left to go, everyone, so it's time to start writing those lists and posting your mail to, where does Santa Claus live? Lapland? Greenland? I don't know. Thailand? If I was Santa, I'd spend the rest of the year in Thailand, because that's a hectic December you got going right there. So what are the lesfic news to tell you? Well, the big news is still the Diva Literary Festival, and tickets are on sale and selling fast. So the inaugural Diva Literary Festival is happening in Birmingham, UK on November the 3rd to the 5th. I'm speaking on 2 panels on Sunday the 5th of November, one on self-publishing and the other on lesbian romance. So if you'd like to come along and get your tickets now, and I'll see you there. Of course, I'm not really the draw. I'm just a tiny, tiny speck in the Diva Literary Festival. There are tons of authors going, and they're adding new things all the time. There's music as well, music and comedy, and there's an awards. So it's a really, really packed program. Do take a look online. But the big draws are the headliners, Mari Hanna, Val McDermid, Stella Duffy, to name but 3. And I'll be sharing a stage with Kiki Archer, Claire Ashton, Carrie Hunter, Jackie Lawrence and Sally Edwards. So please do come along and heckle. We love a heckler. The weekend should be ace, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be great. In other lesfic news, Louise Wilwain's new book of poetry, Glue, expands on the true life script of Louise's first 2 attempts to meet with her birth mother 3 decades after being put up for adoption. The extended remix, Glue, the book, features outstanding poems and vivid prose, a retelling of a childhood shuttled from one carer to the other. And it's been described as clear-eyed, affecting, witty and engaging. But Glue is often disturbing, but ultimately life-affirming. Now, I heard Louise Wilwain on Radio 5 Live today for National Poetry Day, and she was really terrific. So there's Glue the book, which is out, should be out by the time you hear this. And Glue the performance is also coming to London to the Oval House from October the 3rd to the 7th. So if you fancy a bit of performance poetry with a lesbian edge and you're in London, get down to the Oval House for October. That's lesfic news for this month. In personal news, since we last spoke, I've been getting my latest novel off to my editor, who it's now with, and by the time of the next podcast, it should be out. So that's very exciting. The book is called Twice in a Lifetime, and it's a second chance romance set in Chicago. So a bit of a departure for me, but I have to say I've really loved writing it, as the story of the book has been in the back of my head for quite a while, a couple of elements of it. So it's just been a case of putting it in a city that I loved, because it wasn't sort of location dependent. So I've dragged it forward to the front of my brain, scraped it out onto the page. There's a lovely analogy for you. But I'm really excited about it. I really love it. It's a great second chance romance. And that one's coming out at the end of October. And once that's done, I've also been plotting book four in my London romance series, and that will be out next year. And I'll be writing that before I bugger off to Australia and Thailand for Christmas for the month. So I really better get on with my Christmas shopping, hadn't I? Anyway, enough wittering from me. Now it's time for the interview with the marvellous Emma Nichols. I hope you enjoy. So joining me today is UK author Emma Nichols, whose debut novel, Finding You, was released in July, and her follow-up, Remember Me, 2 weeks later, and both books shot to the top of the charts all around the globe at breathtaking speed, frankly. And it caught my eye, so I thought I'd get Emma on to talk about her runaway success, how she managed it, and what she's got planned next. Emma lives in Buckinghamshire with her partner and two children, so welcome, Emma.
Hi, thank you.
It's great to have you. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. Yeah.
And what have you been up to so far today? I know it's quite early in the day. It's like it's 10 o'clock in the morning, but have you done anything so far?
That's right. No, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. The house has already been cleaned. The kids are in school. I've done the shopping, and I've just sat down to have a good chat with you, and then I need to get on and do some writing.
Oh my God, you've been so productive already.
Yeah, the day starts very early in our house, I can say. With a 7 and a 4 year old, it starts very early, so okay. It's always a good thing. We're rarely late for school, put it that way.
Yeah, you've got the routine down now.
We have. Yeah. We have it nailed.
Yeah. So paint a picture to me of where you're speaking from today. What can you see?
I'm sat in my living room. I'm facing a widescreen television because this is the closest place to the internet, and I'm hoping then that it won't drop out.
Me too.
As I look out the window, we've got a sold sign outside our house, which is nice. You know, it'd be great if that ever goes through, because we're in a chain that keeps falling through, but you know, that's the way the housing system works in the UK.
Oh right, okay.
It's a grey day, it's raining, but it's really mild, so it's, I kind of like this weather. There's something sort of haunting about it. It's a nice sort of damp type warmth to go walking in, and then if I look in the other direction, it takes us out into the hallway, out into the kitchen, dining room, and then into this is a back room space in the house, which is, we use as a large play area.
Right.
So and you, we have an indoor rabbit.
What's the rabbit called?
He's called Chase.
Chase the rabbit.
Yeah, he's a little grey mini lop.
Right. Okay.
So he's quite small.
Right. I was going to say, is that the move was planned before your great Lesfic success. You're not buying a massive mansion with the proceeds from all your lesbian fiction books.
Oh, no, God, I wish. I mean, to caution that one straight away, I think, because, as you will know, No.
Maybe next year. Maybe next year.
My partner's day job, not mine, put it
that
way.
Yeah. So I know you've written a bunch of non-fiction books before under a different pseudonym, I'm assuming. So tell me a bit about your writing journey, how you got started, and then how you came to writing lesbian fiction.
The original book, or the very first book I wrote was in peak performance psychology and tennis. And it's actually my name, not the pseudonym is for the fiction.
Right.
And I wrote that really to capture my thoughts in a document that would other people could read and actually basically save quite a lot of time in the coaching process. I coached mental skills, psychology, emotional control, those sorts of terms, if you like. So very much about people helping themselves to perform better in whatever it is they do. Now, I happen to write it in tennis. Tennis was never my sport. I played golf at a good level. So it was just a way of getting those thoughts down in a you know, in some order that people could actually pick up and relate to, you know, read, understand, use. And I wrote a second one in tennis. Mm-hmm. And a bit of poetry as well.
Okay.
I say poetry loosely, because I'm not a poet by any means. It would be an abomination, I'm sure, to anyone who is. But, you know, it was, I suppose, writing in a way that's relatable and in poetry form. And this, you know, this was for kids as much as for adults, because I was working with nine years old to adult. So it's right. It was writing psychology in a way that enabled them to actually understand or relate to it or get something from it. And that was fun, and it was fun for the people reading it as well. Those who have read it have had good feedback from that. And I suppose on the back of that, I then wrote about my mother and her experience, and my experience with my mother dying of a brain tumour. Mm-hmm. So the last 6 months of her life. And a poetry book with that as well. And then literally, I suppose, in the last couple of years, and I started reading lesbian fiction, I liked the idea of the challenge of writing a fiction book, because it is so very different. For me, I don't know, others might say something else, but for me, I found it was a very, very different style of writing.
Oh, no, I think it is, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, from telling in a psychology-based book to trying to show rather than tell, and, you know, and structure and the rest of it. But, I just fancied the challenge. And I started with Duty, actually, Beyond Duty, which is the book that's on my website at the moment, book cover is. The book was a testing ground for me. I haven't finished it. I haven't finished it by a long way. And actually, when I start again, I will rewrite it. It's not, you know, it was quite literally just me playing with writing.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst I was playing with writing with that, got chatting to Muriel, my other half, and she was, you know, she's pretty creative with her ideas. You know, what about a story that is about somebody having to fall in love again, or you know, that process of falling in love again? And that's where it started. It is effectively a story about having to fall in love again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it's essentially, it is in two parts, in that sense. I sort of think is a true sequel in that respect, because that's just the way it came to me, really, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it definitely is. I'm sure you've had some people being a bit about it, because it's a bit of a cliffhanger ending on book one.
it is a cliffhanger ending. And to be honest with you, I haven't seen anything or anyone who had, you know, certainly hasn't been any feedback on, which is the only place I can get it from, Amazon or to me directly.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the sort of feedback they might get for that is they just don't like the book, so they don't read on. But I'd like to think if people like the first book and it grips them or holds them enough, that they will want to carry on anyway, you know, irrespective of how the first one ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's certainly what I would be aiming for as an author, is actually people enjoying what they're reading.
Yeah. I think I would be conflicted, because I don't like cliffhanger endings. So I think I would be feel a bit manipulated. But having said that, like you said, I enjoyed the first one. I actually enjoyed the second one even more. So
yes.
So there you go. So do read on if you did read the first one.
They're different in terms of the pace, in terms of what's going on. I think the second one is I really enjoyed writing as well. I mean, don't get me wrong, I loved writing the whole thing, but the second one seems to be there's a different quality to it,
definitely,
and as you say, whether it's the angst or just in my writing over that period of time changing a little bit. I don't know, I think it's constantly evolving. You would know this better than me, but as I'm writing the third one, I think my writing's evolving again, so...
Definitely, it changes, and also probably, you know, the characters better, you know the story better, you know, you've spent more time with them, so...
The characters are evolving. I think I think there's some surprises in the second one in terms of the way it goes, but that's... Not necessarily surprises, but... certainly had people comment on the relationship with Anna becoming more central. So that's a, mm-hmm. an interesting,
so, interesting thing. So as I said, I read both of them for this and really enjoyed them both. And they've got a lot of twists and turns, love, no shortage of hot sex as well, and so much food and drink. I was constantly hungry, honestly, I really was. Your descriptions of food and drink all the way through made me constantly hungry or wanting a drink the whole way through. So
constantly yeah. hungry and sexually frustrated.
Yeah, sexually frustrated, wanting a glass of red wine or a whiskey.
What's not to love about that?
Yeah. So there you go, there's a recommendation if you haven't read the books yet. So obviously food and drink plays a very big part in it, and they seem to have a grand old lifestyle, drinking champagne as well. So was this a reflection of your life, Emma,
or was
this wish fulfillment on your part? Do you spend all day every day in Buckinghamshire drinking champagne?
Yes, yes. Did you not hear the cork pop before we got the car? No, it's the culture that I sort of see quite a lot of in Corsica, France. They love their food, and you know, I might jest also about the fact that they love their food and they stick it in a microwave, because there is a contradiction in France, and I'm generalizing, of course, sweepingly, but you do get a very fine cuisine, and you get that mentality of fine cuisine and fine wine at the same time as them sticking their meal in the microwave. So it is kind of a, you know, there's this duality playing out there, and they do, you know, from, say, it's just the experience I've had, probably with the in-laws as much as anything, but they do have that. Food plays a central part in their life. You know, they sit down for a meal, they still all sit down together as a family, as opposed to here, where we've got the kids watching the television and we're sitting next door, you know, talking through the day's work or whatever, you know, our own lifestyle might be. So it's very cultural, I think, yeah. for that book. And don't get me wrong, I do come from a background of military, so very, you know, there certainly was back in the 80s, 90s, a big drinking culture in the military. I think there still is. And I think alcohol certainly plays a big part in a lot of people's lives. So I think that, again, there's a relatability to that as a form of escapism.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things I'm watching, you know, some of the badass TV, Wyona Earp type characters. And, you know, you see it even there, where they sort of manage to down huge glasses of whiskey or vodka or whatever it is and still function, and it's like, of course that's a dream world. I certainly couldn't function after that, and I certainly can't drink and type at the same time. So
yeah, it's a skill you perfect after, you know, about 3 or 4 books. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. the badass writer.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that was me in university. I thought you have to drink a bottle of red wine and smoke a packet of fags, and I didn't get much writing done. It was weird. I don't know what happened.
Makes you more creative.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, made me more drunk, definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I do think that your descriptions of food were very good, and I think I included quite a lot of that in my books as well, and people pick up on it, so I always pick it up when someone else does it. So how would you describe these books to someone who's never read one before?
I'd like to think that there's a captivating story in there, that it isn't all just about hot sex and food, but that's and drink. But there is a, as you say, there's a story with a little bit of a twist. You know, I'm not a mystery or a, you know, writer of that style yet, but I do have a natural desire to not make it obvious. And that's quite challenging for me, to not make it obvious, because I'm not familiar with the art of writing this genre and fiction, you know. So for me, there's a learning process there. So I think my books will become more with more intrigue. That's where I'd like them to go. So then the sort of lesbian fiction, or the lesbian part of it, becomes a part of it rather than actually being a lesbian romance and, you know, fiction on the side, but actually a fiction book with lesbian romance within it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So just shifting that dynamic a bit. So yeah. I liked, you know, I wanted to write a book that has a story. Some might say there's a slow burn in there as well in terms of the love interest side of it. And I think there, it's yes, and it's also they can be quite fast moving. So that's my experience of writing it. So some parts of it move slowly, but actually the story itself moves on quite quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess they fall in love pretty quickly in book one, but then things unfurl.
Exactly.
So it's, yeah, and
the journey.
Yeah,
isn't it really?
It's all about the journey.
All about the journey. Yeah. So and it's nice. You know, this is lovely because the setting's fabulous, and Corsica is a fabulous place, and Paris is fabulous, and London, you know, what is not to love about those three places? So that's great.
That's one thing I wanted to bring up with you actually. So the book does take place in London, Paris, and Corsica. Both the books, and obviously you live in Buckinghamshire. Now you did mention about your in-laws. Is somebody there living in one of those places?
Yeah, my in-laws live in Corsica now. They had a house over here and a house in Corsica. So we used to go out. I've been out for this couple of weeks holiday every year, probably certainly for the last 7 years.
Right.
And they recently moved to live out there permanently last year. So I was out there for a month this summer. I wrote my poetry and the book about my mother out there when I was out there. So it's very, I find it a very inspirational place. It's beautiful. The weather, the mountainous terrain, you know, it's just, and then you've got beaches. It's amazing. So it's a lovely, lovely place. So, you know, that was the easy bit. Obviously, I know a bit about London. You can always use the internet as well. I've been to London quite a few times, been to Paris a few times. It just seemed a natural thing to have the set, you know, sort of Anna's setting in Paris and Eva with Lauren working in London, but from Corsica. So
yeah,
and it just worked nicely.
And of course, the book opens as well with Anna's mother getting bad news health wise. So, did you use your experience with your mother as well, sort of come into that?
Not consciously, to be honest, because they're very different.
Okay.
Yeah. No. There was nothing. It wasn't at the forefront of my mind at all. So, if it did, it's completely unconscious. That was just. Yeah, I don't know, that just seemed to feel, I'm a very, very, I should probably say feel a lot, but it just felt right for the character.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm very, very character driven, I get into my characters a lot, and really try to get under their skin, as I'm sure all writers do, but, you know, for me that's the central thing, because I write from the psychology in my head, I'm writing through the psychology, if you like, rather than any other way. I don't know any other way to write, to be honest.
Character driven is always good.
Yeah.
And as I said, the book has sort of a couple of really major twists, and I kind of guessed the first one, but I did not guess the second one, so well done. Did you have to sort of rework that and concentrate on the pacing of the story to get it perfectly right?
I'll be honest with you, no. And I didn't even know I didn't know those twists were going to be in there.
Okay.
They came as a function of the writing, mm-hmm. And as a function of the development of the story as it played out in my mind as I was writing it. So I have a broad understanding of the story. I have a start point. I know roughly what's going to where I want to be by sort of the middle-ish of the book, and I didn't expect to end the book the way that it ended, the first book.
I didn't
expect to do that. That wasn't in my mind to do that. It just felt that was the right thing to do because of the way the book had gone in the first instance and what I knew needed to come in the second book.
Mm-hmm.
That it felt absolutely the right thing. So Yeah, because no, I honestly didn't. I didn't expect to do that.
Well, well, you did. Well, you did it very well.
Well, no, thank you. I think sometimes, for me particularly, I would overthink it, and if I start to overthink something,
mm-hmm.
then it will not. It wouldn't come across as in the same way at all.
Yeah.
And I know that from the way that if I have tried to shift stuff around and play with it. Oh my God, that causes me, I don't know about you, but that causes me no end of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I do tend to sort of, well, you know, I do tend to sort of try and write it out as it's happening. And then, of course, when you go back and edit, as you say, you know, sort of with your current book and others, you know, you go back and you find the gaps and you go, oh my God, that just doesn't go there and that's got to come out. And, you know, then you start shifting around a little bit, but I try not to shift around too much.
Okay.
Mostly for my second draft would be more about expansion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And with these books as well, so you've got a couple of follow-ups coming up, right? The Hangover and Beyond Duty, as you said.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me a bit about those. Are they both going to be in the same series as well?
No, two different series. So the next book is a follow-on from first two, and again I haven't really,
so that's The Hangover, is it?
The Hangover, yes, yeah, sorry, yeah. The Hangover is the third in the series, and I hadn't really thought that I was going to write a third, but it's there, it needs to be there, so that's absolutely right, and that will take Anna's that will take Eva's story further. And of course, Anna and Lauren will be there.
Yeah. With children, perhaps.
Well, they've got they have the one. And yeah, it won't, the time span won't. Well, I don't know. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
I won't write anything off because you just never know.
Yeah.
It might be right that another child comes along. It might not. I don't know.
At the moment, you've got The Hangover is like that's the end of the series. Is that correct?
In my mind, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because I don't know. I've read series books and you know, there are some out there going to 9, 10, 11, 12, and I go, oh my God. After getting to 5, I'm struggling sometimes with series books. And that's happened with a couple of authors, so it's not specific to the author. It's more my attention span, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I know from writing series as well. It's, you know, as an author, yeah, you can get bored of it as well. So.
Yeah, that's exactly. I think I need something because I need to feel fresh, and maybe after I've written something else, then I might feel fresh to go back to extend a story or take a, you know, there may be a spin-off, but I think I would put it in a completely different type of storyline, so it wouldn't. You know, it wouldn't be related necessarily, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's The Hangover. I've got a couple of other ideas in my mind, and I've got Duty. And Duty's probably going to come out. It won't be the one after. I think I've got another one that's burning. So, yeah.
Okay.
I've got another two or three that's burning, that are burning, in my mind to write, and then Duty might be somewhere in the middle of those or towards the end of those.
And is,
strangely enough, but.
Okay. And is Beyond Duty? I'm guessing from the title, does it have any sort of military ness about it?
Yeah, that's the military. Okay. So very strong military IRA orientations, set in the 90s.
Right.
So yeah.
Okay. Well, cool.
So that's a good one.
And will that be sort of under the lesbian fiction banner? Because I know you sort
yes,
of said
yes. No, these will all still be under the lesbian fiction banner. I don't think my writing's at the level I can stick. I don't think it's gonna, you know, get out there for as a straight up fiction book just yet. But who knows? Depends how fast I write and how quickly I improve.
Yeah, yeah. But I'd say military books or stuff with service books are very popular, so that would be great. And obviously, as you say, you were in the military, right?
What's not to love about a woman in uniform?
Exactly. Stick one of those on the cover. And
I've still got mine in the loft.
Oh, well, there you go. Are you going to adorn the cover?
Yeah, maybe. No,
that's a definite no.
I think one still needs to be in one's 30s to get away with that.
So with Finding You and Remember Me, obviously they're your debut books. They came out and they stormed to the number one in the charts in the UK, in the US, all around the globe, I think. So what were your thoughts when that happened? Because you must have been pretty amazed.
Yeah, I was, absolutely. I mean, when I saw what the first one was doing, it actually put the timing of the second one forward because it was already written. And I thought, no, and not because of what the first one was doing, because people were enjoying the first one. And actually, I didn't want them to wait so long.
Yeah.
Because I think that's quite, when it's a two-part like it is, that for me, just, you know, to leave it another month or so, it's like, no, I don't want to do that, because I would want to read it I wouldn't want to wait for the second one. So you know, that brought that forward. But I know it's been absolutely amazing, and you know, the length of time as well, it's not, you know, for it to do what it did so early, but then to have carried on as well, it hasn't sort of fallen away too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I've got nothing to gauge it by, but I'm just pleased, really, really pleased that people have enjoyed reading it. That's the only reason I write. You know, it's just because if people can enjoy it and they can get something out of it for them that takes them away, that helps them to relate, helps them to deal with their own stuff, I don't know, whichever way they take it, then that's a bonus, you know, that's just fabulous.
Mm.
So it's very exciting. You know, and you know what it's like. You're sort of watching, oh, look, it's gone to number one. Oh, fantastic. And we stick it out on social media. And, you know, you have to go after a while and go, oh, you know, there is that game going on with it. But, you know, you just got to let that run on side. Otherwise, it's just, oh, that's too much. And that's not really me either. I'm introverted and I like to just sit back and write rather than get involved in all that stuff, to be honest.
Did you do anything to celebrate there? Did you light your characters
darling, we're
pop a champagne? France.
in Corsica on holiday, celebrating every day with that Kia Royale and fine wines, and yeah, you know, the photos, we've got the photos to prove it. You know, nothing special, because we sort of, when we're on holiday, we'll celebrate every day anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah, every day
kind of thing. But yeah, no, yeah. No sort of, you know, book launch celebration or anything like that. It's just we just quietly let it out there.
And I saw on social media, talking of that you said you've got a audiobook deal now, and it's going to go into foreign translation as well.
I've got, yeah, basically, we started that process ourselves. Muriel and I do everything ourselves, so and Muriel does quite a bit on that side of it for me. That's my partner. So we had already got into ACX and Babel Cube to look for translation and look for audio.
Yeah.
And had somebody approach for audio who I think has, and you know this yourself, has a perfect voice for what I want the books, for what I want for the three books, because they would put it in all three. There's no point. I have to put it in the first two, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just do the first one.
And then whilst we were doing that, an agent came along and said, oh, you know, can we look out for you? So I said, yeah, great. So I think they're looking out for the translation now, and we'll probably end up going down the audio route in independently again,
because
That seems easy enough to do. You'll be able to give me some hints and tips on that. But
I can, yeah.
It seems easy enough to do from the perspective if you've got somebody who can do the audio, then it should be a simple enough process to get it out through Audible and therefore Amazon, etc.
Definitely, yeah. It really is just about choosing the right voice, and that's sort of a bit nervy. But yeah, as you say, I just brought out Nothing to Lose in August, and that's gone really well, and I'm really pleased with the narrator. So yeah, if you want any tips, I can give you them.
Thank you.
And what about, talking about social media, you're very active on Twitter, which I am as well, so I see you there a lot. Are you active on other platforms as well? And is it you doing it, or is it anybody else doing it for you?
It's Muriel and I do it. She does all the setting up in the morning. That's her hour and a half while I'm sorting out the kids for breakfast. Right. So we have a little routine going. I think she's done it brilliantly.
She has, yeah.
Getting a structure. We have a little structure to the post, as you've probably seen. There's always a funny one at the end of the day, at least we try to be funny at the end of the day. Might not always come across funny, but I think we try to be very light-hearted with it. It's not all about the books. It's actually just a forum for sharing and being there and interacting and having fun with it. Really, there's a little bit. Those posts go to my Facebook page, but that's not as busy by any means. Not at all. So Twitter's our main route out.
Okay.
I think Pinterest, I think we're sort of starting to do some work on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's mostly that really. And obviously, I've got my website and people can sign up there as well. But there's, so you've just started bringing out newsletters actually, haven't you? But I haven't even thought about doing that yet. It's just.
Yeah, I've had a newsletter going for a couple of years now, but I've just started doing it a little bit more often. So yeah. But I mean, I'm the same. I like Twitter. I'm not as active on Facebook. I should be more. But I don't know. I think Twitter suits me more than Facebook for some reason. So
yeah, I like it more. I don't know. It's just quick and punchy, and I don't know. It's just. I mean, people say it's the adults' version of Facebook. I don't even know what that means, but it's just like I think I've got the mental span for it. Yeah, it's fine. It was nice and easy and lively. It's interactive. It's more fast moving, I think, than Facebook.
Yeah, maybe that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, can you describe? Have you got a writing process these days? Because obviously, you're as you say, you're very new to it. But have you got a process that works for you now?
I think so. Do you know what? I think it's about, if you're writing, I think what's helped me is because I've done an awful lot of personal development, and I mean that in the nicest way. It means I can trust myself. So I know that if I don't feel like writing, I don't feel like writing. And I think that's really important because otherwise you can sit there and try and force. And it's actually the next day it'll just flow. And I know for me that I need to spend a lot of time thinking. So I will walk. I walk prolifically because that's what I'm doing, my plotting and planning and processes. And I do a lot of that up front. So I almost, can feel the way that's going to go. That scene's going to, I can feel that scene. I've literally walked through it. Metaphorically walked through it.
Yeah, literally and metaphorically.
I haven't picked up the bottle of tight every time because I would not get any words down. All the sex scenes for that. I mean, crikey, that wouldn't be enough time in the day. So I do a lot of plotting and planning in my mind. I do write down character information, and I write. So I have a little almost. What do you call it? Like a not a flow chart, but a family chart, really.
Right.
So who's related to whom, etc. I have that mapped out.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I know my characteristics of the individuals and what their voice, how their voice is.
Yeah.
And then so in terms of the actual scenes from a physical rather than a mental perspective, that's not so clearly mapped out for me. That will depend on where the character is, where I am inside the character, where they are as to what they do next, and how that bit flows through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that I will perfect that more as I write, but that's the easiest way for me at the moment to do that.
Is right.
Just go with it. Go with where the character is.
Okay.
Just with an idea of the start, the middle, and roughly the end, but I'm also allowing that to change. I don't get hooked up on that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what's been the biggest challenge for you? Because obviously, like you say, you're very new to writing fiction and getting all these processes down. What's been the biggest challenge?
Being brave enough to put the books out there.
Oh yeah, that doesn't get any easier, by the way.
Huge. And I can, it's funny, I can see that. It is It is a tough decision because you always fear that the feedback, and of course we never fear the good feedback, do we? We always fear the negative feedback, mm-hmm. You know, and the review that just sends you spiraling to despair. And it's hard, it's, you know. As I say, I've worked in peak performance. You know, that's all about how to handle loss and losing. You know, losing matches and, you know, losing the plot, quite literally. So it's, you do have to be robust and know that, you know, some people aren't going to like it. You know, some people are, and especially, you know, dare I say, a critic getting hold of it, you know, they might not like it at all because they're looking at it from a specific perspective. Yeah. And that, you know, that's the thing, is keeping that in mind, that it's somebody else's perspective and everybody's entitled to their perspective.
Yeah.
And you can do nothing about it, you know, the reviews go up there on you, there's not a lot you can do to, you know, you can't pick up the phone and have a conversation with that person and say, oh, why did you say that? You know, and get the information that would actually help you as an author to improve the way you write, or, you know, you can't get that easily. At least I haven't found a way to get that easily. If people are prepared to write to you or email you, fine, and have the interaction, then fine. But, you know, somebody just putting up and I've been fortunate, you know, I haven't had too bad a run of it yet. But the wider you get, of course, the more chance of that happening there is. But it's hard. So to go out there and as a new author, I think I was extremely naive, and I didn't even think perhaps books would get that level of visibility. And subsequent to that, I've been lucky because they've had the visibility, and I've had much more positive feedback than negative by a long way. So I've been fortunate in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and now I'm left, of course, with the third one going, oh my God, the people who've loved the first two, I have expectations now. You know, and, so as you say, it never ends, yeah. Because now you've got this cycle of, oh my God, I can't let them down.
No, it never ends. It never ends.
Yes, I'm talking to that for the rest of my life. Put me in an early grave, that
will. Welcome to the life of a writer.
Yeah.
I mean, well done for doing it. And no, it does take courage though, and I think people don't realise that. But on the other hand, it's great to do it. And like you say, the best reward is having people read your stories and enjoy them. So that's from the flip side, it can bring a lot of joy too. I'm not sure if this is if anybody's given you a lot of advice, but have you had a great piece of writing advice in your short career as yet?
The only advice I've had was actually from Kiki. She read the book before I put it out there.
Right.
And the best advice, she said, don't listen to what anybody says. And, you know your work, and you have, you know, basically, it's whether you trust your work, yourself, and therefore you make the decisions. And I think it probably comes back to the point that, you know, many people out there will provide their perspective, but you have to go with your instincts, and that's, you know, that's basically what she was saying. So I think that makes good sense. You know, it's not about not listening to advice. You know, gosh, I'd love, you know, to work with somebody who I could have that relationship with and learn from, without any shadow of a doubt. You know, so if you know of anybody who's interested, give them my details by all means, because that's what I want to do. You know, it doesn't satisfy me to just write for the sake of writing. I write because I want to write something good that people want to read, and that's, you know, that's going to take some work on my part as well to keep improving that process. But if you took in what everybody said to you, you would never get your book out there.
Very true.
I can absolutely see that.
Definitely.
Because you'd always be trying to perfect it, for one thing. At some point, you have to cut off and say, you know what, I know I could improve this, or I know that could be worded differently, or said, you know, expressed better, or whatever. But you just constantly go around the book trying to make perfection happen when it's not going to.
Yeah,
and in doing that, you could lose the love of writing, and you could lose the love of your story as well. So
yeah, no, definitely, and you'll think the same thing in a year when you read the books. You'll go, really? Is that, why did I write that sentence? But you know,
yeah.
Don't go back. Yeah. Don't go back. Look forward. And I think well done, Kiki, for that. And I think she said very similar things to me when I was first starting out, because I met her at a festival and sort of said, and she was just saying, yeah, put out the book that you want with the cover you want, and don't worry about what anyone else says. So yeah. So well done her. What a service. Yes. What a service she provides.
And except a bottle of red wine at the weekend, apparently.
So and so obviously what's next for you is The Hangover, and when's that due out?
Well, I'm going to do my best to get that out before Christmas.
Okay.
Yep, so I'll have to see how that goes, and I'm not going to make any promises at this stage, but I'd like to get it out before Christmas.
Okay, cool. And if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Well, you know what, I studied this question and I've come up with singer-songwriters, so I don't know if that's okay or if that's cheating.
That's all right, yeah. Yeah.
But Joan Baez and Ed Sheeran. And
that's an interesting coupling right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Clearly not a husband and wife coupling, for the age difference would be an interesting one. But I'm just a real lover of life, you know, and the way that those, both of them, the writers, that their work is all about life. Mm-hmm. And it's just the way that they tell it. It's the way they tell their story. I've been a big fan of Joan for a very long time. Mm-hmm. That revolutionary, anarchistic sort of, in a very positive way, works. I like that. And Ed Sheeran, I just think, is an absolute genius.
He is. No, I agree.
Absolute genius. Yeah, brilliant. I love Roald Dahl as well as a writer. And I could go through a list of writers.
You can only have two. No, I've got.
Those two. And it's funny because I actually take inspiration from the way in which they do what they do, in my writing, and the way that I write. So,
cool.
They're my two faves.
Brilliant. All right, well, this has been fantastic. Emma, thank you so much for taking the time.
You're very welcome. Thanks very much for asking me. And I look forward to catching up face-to-face over a glass of wine, probably.
Yes, at the Diva Festival. Yes. So if you're listening and you're coming along, come and have a glass of wine with us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, brilliant.
Happy to share.
I'll see you then.
Yeah, take care.
Cheers.
That's the end of this lesbian book club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the All I Want series, the London Romance series, Nothing to Lose, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, Bella Books, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, so come on down and follow me there. I'm also on Facebook, claire.lydon. And if you're yet to try my books and you'd like to get a free lesbian romance to see just how I write, then go to www.clairelydon.co.uk and sign up in the box at the top of the page. Leave me your email address and I'll send you a free book. Thank you to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And the Lesbian Lounge made a great return to form when Denise and Donna met up again in Florida last month. So that was terrific to hear. Join me next time for more hot book club action, where I'll be interviewing fabulous crime writer Wendy Hudson. See you then.